Welcome to the show. I'd like to ask you two questions. After I ask the first question, take a moment to thoughtfully consider your answer. Here's the question. Why do you believe many Americans are scared shitless of the IRS? Take a moment to get the answer clear in your head. Now, I'd like to ask you the second question. Why are millions of Americans not afraid of the IRS at all, including me? Perhaps those questions have complex answers. Perhaps not. I'd like to share my thoughts with you and see if we can agree there is a way to free Americans from fear of the IRS.
The Dr. Reality Vodcast with Dave Champion.
Let's start with this. As many of you know, income tax is my area of expertise. I am arguably the most knowledgeable person in the United States concerning upon whom the income tax has been imposed and by association upon whom it has not been imposed. I'm the author of Income Tax, Shattering the Myths, the best-selling book in America that reveals the truth of the income tax the government does not want the American people to know. That truth being that when you read the law for yourself, rather than listening to government propaganda, you find that Congress has never imposed the income tax on ordinary hardworking Americans. For some of you, just hearing that truth caused you to feel fear. Today we're going to see if we can get rid of that fear, or at least ratchet it down quite a bit. I should probably start the discussion by telling you I haven't filed an income tax return or paid a penny of income tax in 32 years. So, where is my level of fear? On a scale of 1 to 100, it's zero. Why? Because what the law really says, not what you've been brainwashed to believe it says, but what it really says is kryptonite to the federal government. What is the most common reason people fear the IRS? Simple. Lack of knowledge. Humans fear what they don't know or understand. Part of the government's approach to keeping the American people fearful is having structured income tax law to seem like it is an impenetrable labyrinth. If you're convinced you cannot understand the law, you won't bother looking at it. Making no attempt to look at the law is a huge win for the government's agenda of keeping you fearful. By not bothering to look, you stay ignorant, and from that ignorance, you remain fearful. As a quick side note, I'm offering free shipping on any order placed on my website, drreality.news, drreality.news. If the order contains a copy of Income Tax Shattering the Myths, use the code TARIFFS at checkout. More on that later. Most people believe the government is not operating the way it should and needs to be held accountable. I agree. So what might that look like? Is the government going to hold itself accountable? No. If the government is not going to hold itself accountable, who will? I think it's self-evident that the answer is we the people. It's also self-evident that people who fear the government are incapable of holding it accountable. For that reason, what we're discussing today transcends the IRS and income tax. It's really about ditching the fear so you can do your duty as part of we the people. So far, we've determined fear often comes from a lack of knowledge. In terms of today's discussion, that lack of knowledge pertains to the income tax. More specifically, a lack of knowledge concerning who it has been imposed upon and who it has not been imposed upon. I'm going to show you a super easy way to make sense of income tax law. You're going to be surprised how simple it is when it is laid out properly for you. Before I jump into that, let me make sure you understand a key point of how law works. For illustration, let's consider Title 45 of the United States Code, which is entitled Railroads. If you don't own, operate, or work for a railroad, there is nothing in Title 45 that pertains to you. As an example, we all know what an employee is, right? Yet, in Title 45, employee is defined to mean only a person who works for a railroad. My point is that law has to be, and is, very specific about to whom it applies. That principle applies to all areas of law, including income tax. understanding that. Let's get into how simple income tax is to understand. We need to begin with the understanding that every single tax law in U.S. history contains provisions detailing how the tax is to be collected from those who owe it. With that in mind, let's begin the process of easily understanding income tax law. The income tax is codified to Subtitle A of Title 26 of the United States Code, and it looks like this. You'll notice there is a red rectangle around Chapters 1, 2, and 3, and a blue line through Chapter 2A. You'll also note that Chapters 4, 5, and 6 are outside the red box. Allow me to explain why it's marked that way. The red rectangle is around Chapters 1, 2, and 3 for two reasons. Reason number one is that Chapters 1, 2, and 3 have been in Subtitle A since the 1939 code was reorganized into the 1954 code, which means they've been in Subtitle A for 71 years. The second reason is Chapters 1, 2, and 3 are the modern codification of the original income tax law enacted by Congress in 1913. Down at the bottom, we see Chapter 6, which is outside the red rectangle. That's because it has nothing to do with the origins or imposition of the income tax. It simply allows corporations within an affiliated group to file a single return. Just above that, we see Chapter 5, which was repealed by Congress. Above that, we see Chapter 4, which also has nothing to do with the origins and imposition of the income tax, because it was enacted into law in 2010. In summary, what is outside the red rectangle has nothing to do with the origins and imposition of income tax, while what is inside the red rectangle is the progeny of the 1913 Act that imposed the income tax, with one exception. That exception is Chapter 2A, through which you can see I put a blue line because unearned income Medicare contribution obviously has nothing to do with the origins and imposition of the income tax. Only Chapters 1, 2, and 3 reflect what was passed into law in 1913. I marked up the screenshot this way because as we look at Subtitle A, I want you to know why certain parts are pivotal to the understanding upon whom the tax has been imposed, while other parts are irrelevant to that inquiry. With that understanding, let's get you educated on how to view Subtitle A. Chapter 1 is entitled Normal Taxes and Surtaxes and contains more than 99% of the income tax law. As you can see in the screenshot, Chapter 1 contains sections 1 through 1400, while Chapter 2 contains just three sections. That's it! The entire income tax is in Chapters 1 and 2. With that reality under your belt, do you recall a moment ago when I said every single tax law in history specifies how it is to be collected from those who owe it? Well, there is nothing in Chapters 1 and 2 about collecting the tax. That means the collection provisions have to be somewhere else. But since all income tax law is contained in Subtitle A, and Subtitle A only has three relevant chapters, you've probably already figured out that the collection of the tax from those who owe it is found in Chapter 3. And right you are. So, what is the title of Chapter 3? The title is Withholding of Tax on Non-Resident Aliens and Foreign Corporations. Wait, that can't be right. If the collection of a tax is only upon those who owe it, that would mean that the income tax is only owed by non-resident aliens and foreign corporations with U.S. source income. And again, right you are. Chapters 1 and 2 are what I call the rules of computation. They don't tell you who owes the tax. They simply provide the rules that are to be applied in determining how much is owed by those upon whom the tax has been imposed. Here's an analogy. Imagine you're reading a paper that details all the different protocols available for treating cancer. It's extensive. It covers existing protocols, new protocols that are under development, and protocols that the allopathic community sees as unconventional. Implicit in that document is that these protocols only apply to people with cancer and do not apply to people who do not have cancer. Similarly, Chapters 1 and 2 detail the rules of computation in the same way the cancer paper details the cancer protocols. Also, just as the cancer paper doesn't tell the reader who has cancer, chapters 1 and 2 don't tell you who owes the tax. Now, I'd like to give you a clear example of how chapter 1 is connected to withholding the tax from foreign persons who owe it. In chapter 1, we find section 61, which defines gross income. I'm not going to share the entire list, but here are the relevant items. Compensation for services, gross income derived from business, gains derived from dealing in property, interest, rents, royalties, dividends, annuities, pensions, income from life insurance, and endowment contracts. So that's in Chapter 1, the rules of computation. Now, let's go to Chapter 3, which is withholding of U.S. income tax from non-resident aliens. In Section 1441A, we find that a person who has control, receipt, custody, disposal, or payment of any of the items of income specified in subsection B of any non-resident alien individual. So, what's in subsection B? Answer: dividends, rent, salary, wages, premiums, annuities, compensations, remunerations, emoluments. Almost identical language to the definition of gross income in section 61. Why is there a slight difference in the listed items of gross income? Because in the opening sentence of section 61, it says, including but not limited to the following items. In other words, because the section 61's list of items is not exhaustive, it makes sense that elsewhere in the code, the listed items would be similar but not identical. 1441A also says withholding is to be done on, quote, amounts subject to tax under section 871. So where is section 871 found? In chapter 1, of course, which is the rules of computation. In other words, in section 871, you find out what is being taxed, but then you have to go to chapter 3 to find out from whom that tax is to be collected. Now, let's shift to Treasury Decision 8734, which is entitled Section 1441, Withholding of Tax on Non-Resident Aliens. In the portion discussing the regulations at 26 CFR 1.1441-2, in paragraph A, it states, for the purpose of regulations under Chapter 3 of the Internal Revenue Code, the term amounts subject to withholding means amounts from sources within the United States that constitutes either fixed or determinable annual or periodic income described in paragraph B. So, what does paragraph B say? It says, for the purposes of Chapter 3 of the Code and the regulations thereunder, fixed or determinable annual or periodical gain income is all income included in gross income under Section 61. In other words, the income tax to be collected from foreign persons with U.S. source income is the items of gross income listed in Section 61. Of course, Section 61 is in Chapter 1, which, as I've been telling you, is merely the rules of computation. Let's now turn to Treasury Decision 8881. You can see here the Treasury Decision 8881 is described by the Treasury Department as revisions to regulations relating to withholding of tax on certain U.S. source income paid to foreign persons. Now let's read the summary section together. This document contains amendments to the final regulations relating to the withholding of income tax under sections 1441, 1442, 1443 on certain U.S. source income paid to foreign persons and related requirements governing collection, deposits, refund, and credit of withheld amounts under sections 1461 through 1463. To make sure we're all tracking together, all the sections just mentioned are in Chapter 3, Withholding of Income Tax from Foreign Persons. I hope everyone is clear the Treasury Decision 8881 deals exclusively with U.S. income tax being collected from foreign persons. Now, let's jump back up to the top where it says that 8881 pertains to 26 CFR Parts 1 and 31. That's important because it's the Treasury Department telling us that 8881 addresses withholding relevant to parts 1 and 31 of income tax regulations. So, what are parts 1 and 31? As you can see right here, part 1 is the regulations pertaining to the income tax. In fact, part 1 is the regs for Chapter 1 of the Code, which, as we've already discussed, are the rules of computation. Treasury Decision 8881 ties the Chapter 1 rules of computation to the collection of the tax from those who owe it, which is foreign persons with U.S. source income. Here you see that Part 31 is the regulations pertaining to employment taxes, which means payroll withholding. To be clear, what you're seeing in 8881 is the Treasury Department saying that payroll withholding is to take place on the U.S. source income being paid to foreign persons who are working as employees. In other words, Treasury Decision 8881 details how U.S. income tax on foreign persons is to be withheld generally, as well as being withheld via payroll withholding when the foreigner is working as an employee. You may have noticed that the non-payroll form of withholding is repeatedly referred to as Chapter 3 withholding. Why is that? That's done to distinguish that manner of withholding from Chapter 24 withholding, which is payroll withholding. Let me illustrate that for you by bringing up a previous screenshot. But before I do, I need to tell you that the command for payroll withholding is found in Section 3402, which is within Chapter 24. Remember that section, 3402, because you're about to hear it mentioned. Let's read this text from Treasury Decision 8734 again. Section 1.1441-1B4 and 5 have been added to provide an overview of how the withholding of reporting procedures under Chapter 3 of the Code relate to the information reporting provisions under Chapter 61 of the Code and other withholding regimes under Section 3402, wage withholding, 3405, withholding on pensions, annuities, etc., and 3406, backup withholding. As you can see, there are only two forms of withholding, Chapter 3 withholding and Chapter 24 withholding, known as wage withholding. There are two critical points about those methods of withholding. First, there are only two methods of withholding U.S. source income from foreign persons. Chapter 24 withholding is used when the foreign person is working as an employee, and Chapter 3 is used in all other circumstances. Second, and by far more importantly, there is no statute, regulation, or Treasury decision in existence stating that a U.S. citizen earning his or her own domestic income is to have income tax withheld from him or her. Ever. That statement includes payroll withholding. Payroll withholding is to be conducted exclusively upon foreign persons receiving U.S. source income when working as an employee. Let me make the following statement very clearly. There is zero authority in the tax code for a company to withhold income tax from the pay of American citizens, period, full stop. Before I continue, if you value this sort of information, which you won't get anywhere else, please take a moment to subscribe to the channel and hit the like button so the algorithms show this content to more people. Also, at the end, I have a special offer for you, so please stay with me for that. I imagine there are some people watching who just can't wrap their heads around the truth. I get it. I'm 65 years old, and the government's disinformation, that the income tax applies to everyone, has been around since I was a boy. My point is, I understand how someone whose mind is saturated with government propaganda could struggle to accept the truth. For that reason, I'm going to give you some further confirming facts. Let's do a brief recap to ensure you understand the context in which the additional information fits. Here are the salient points we've covered thus far. Subtitle A of Title 26 United States Code is the law people refer to as income tax. Subtitle A contains three chapters that reflect the origin and imposition of the income tax. Those are chapters 1, 2, and 3. Chapters 1 and 2 are merely the rules of computation. Every tax law in existence contains provisions by which to collect the tax from those who owe it. Chapter 3, entitled Withholding of Tax on Non-Resident Aliens and Foreign Corporations, is the collection mechanism for the income tax detailed in Chapters 1 and 2. There are only two forms of withholding in law, Chapter 3 withholding and Chapter 24 withholding. Chapter 24 withholding is wage withholding. Withholding under both Chapters 3 and 24 is to withhold the tax on U.S. source income owned by a foreign person. There is no law that authorizes withholding of income tax from an American citizen or his or her on his or her own domestic income. In other words, U.S. income tax has been imposed only on foreign persons with U.S. source income, and Chapters 3 and 24 are the exclusive means of collecting the tax from those upon whom it has been imposed. With that summation as context, here is the additional information. I believe it's accurate to say that, other than those who've read Income Tax Shattering the Myths, everyone believes the tax form they are required to file before April 15th each year is the Form 1040. Because that is a universally held belief, the facts I'm about to share will likely blow your mind. First, a bit of background. Statutes passed by Congress are what we refer to in common speech as laws. However, the U.S. Supreme Court has said Congress passes, quote, the broad language of the statute. In other words, the statutes Congress passes often lack the specificity needed to implement them. That brings us to regulations, which are created by the federal department tasked with implementing a statute. The purpose of regulations is to provide the specificity that's missing from the statute and is needed to implement the law. For that reason, the federal courts have ruled that in matters of taxation, regulations control. Understanding that, in income tax statutes, where does one find who is to use a Form 1040? Answer: nowhere. In the thousands of pages of income tax statutes, there is no mention of who is to use a Form 1040. Perhaps we can attribute that to the statute speaking broadly without the specificity the regulations are expected to provide. So then, in the income tax regulations, where does one find who is to use a Form 1040? Answer: nowhere. In the tens of thousands of pages of income tax regulations, never once does the Treasury Department tell the American people who is to use Form 1040. Now, that's more than a little odd, because the very purpose of regulations is to provide sufficient specificity to allow a person who may have a duty under the law to comply with that duty. Yet the regs don't inform us who is to use a 1040. At this point, allow me to ask you a question. Who told you Form 1040 was the correct form for you to file? Was it your parents? Your peers? Perhaps an accountant? I ask because the one thing we know for certain is it was not the Treasury Department. In other words, and please, don't take offense at this, you've been filing Form 1040 simply because somebody told you to. Of course, the very existence of Form 1040 tells us someone is required to file it, right? And if someone is required to file it, we know the government has to tell us who that is in some writing somewhere. Ordinarily, the first place we'd look for that is in the statutes, but we know it's not there. The next logical place to look is in the regs, but it's not there either. That leaves us with just one other authoritative resource for this kind of information: Treasury decisions. Treasury decisions are official and binding pronouncements by the Secretary of the Treasury on whatever issue is being addressed. All officers and employees of the Treasury Department, which includes the IRS, are legally required to adhere to what the Secretary says in his Treasury decisions. While Treasury decisions are not law, the federal courts have held that Treasury decisions can be used to clarify regulations that do not provide the necessary specificity. Because who is to use Form 1040 is never mentioned in any regulation. If Treasury decisions reveal who is to use Form 1040, those Treasury decisions are legally controlling on the subject. As it turns out, there are 11 Treasury decisions that speak to the question of who is to use a Form 1040. In those 11 Treasury decisions, the Secretary is crystal clear about who is to use Form 1040. Today, I'll give you a few examples so you can see for yourself what the Secretary has said. Here is Treasury Decision 2815, in which the Secretary says, "Non-resident alien individuals or their authorized agents should use Form 1040. Treasury Decision 2090, in the section entitled Non-Resident Alien, Agent Of, says this, "The responsible heads, agents, or representatives of non-resident aliens who are in charge of the property owned or business carried on within the United States by non-resident aliens shall make full and complete returns of the income therefrom on Form 1040 revised and shall pay any and all taxes, normal and additional, assessed upon said income of such non-resident aliens." The other 9 Treasury decisions also say non-resident aliens with U.S. source income or the non-resident alien's domestic agent are to file Form 1040, and they say it just as clearly as the two you just saw. But here's the most important thing about those Treasury decisions. While there are 11 Treasury decisions saying Form 1040 is to be used by a non-resident alien or his domestic agent, there are 0 Treasury decision saying anyone other than a non-resident alien or his domestic agent is to file a 1040. In other words, there is not a single government document in existence in the entire 112-year history of the income tax that says American citizens earning their own domestic income are to file a 1040 or any other tax form for that matter. I'd like to return to the words of Treasury Decision 2815 for a moment, because it lays out the process in a simple, easy-to-understand way. Here it is. Non-resident alien individuals or their authorized agents should use Form 1040 revised or Form 1040A revised in making returns of income derived from sources within the United States, regardless of amount, unless the tax on such income has been fully paid at the source. If a non-resident alien individual is not liable for any tax which has been withheld at the source, no refund of such tax will be permitted unless such a return is filed and a statement is attached thereto indicating the amounts of tax withheld and the names and post office addresses of all withholding agents. Unless a non-resident alien individual shall render a return of income, the tax will be collected on the basis of his gross income, not his net income, from sources within the United States. That paragraph is a great description of how withholding works. I want to draw your attention to 2 particular parts. The first is where it says, unless the tax on such income has been fully paid at the source. I draw your attention to the words at the source. And this part, a non-resident alien individual is not liable for any tax which has been withheld at the source. Again, I draw your attention to the words at the source. I draw your attention to those words because at the source is merely a contraction of what is said in the opening sentence, which reads, non-resident alien individuals or their authorized agents should use Form 1040 revised or 1040A revised in making returns of income derived from sources within the United States. In other words, in many cases, the withholding of the tax on U.S. source income of a foreign person takes place at the source. Source meaning the point of origin of the foreign person's U.S. income. You may recall that Section 3402 in Chapter 24 is the payroll withholding statute. Allow me to draw your attention to its title, which is Income Tax Collected at Source. When it says collected at source, it means the tax on U.S. source income belonging to a non-resident alien being collected at the point of origin, in this case, via wage withholding. Every time collection at source is used in income tax law, it means the tax on U.S. source income belonging to a foreign person being collected at the point of origin. I know I've covered a lot of ground today. While the U.S. government has gone out of its way to make income tax law appear inscrutable, I hope I've shown you an easy way to understand it. Of course, what I covered with you today is only a fraction of the evidence you'll find in income tax shattering the myths. I hope today's presentation has been clear and concise enough to ratchet down fear of the IRS. Understanding the subject isn't all that tough. It just has to be laid out in the right way, which is exactly what you'll find in Income Tax Shattering the Myths. Earlier, I mentioned that you get free shipping on any order that contains Income Tax Shattering the Myths when you use the code TARIFFS. Why tariffs? I initiated that offer of free shipping in a presentation a few months ago in which I discussed Donald Trump's plan to impose tariffs and repeal the income tax. In that presentation, I said Congress will never repeal the income tax. So Americans will end up paying far more in taxes because they'll be paying tariffs and income tax. As I'm sitting here today, the Trump White House has already submitted its tax priorities to Congress, and repealing the income tax was not part of the package. In other words, I was correct that repeal is not on the table. Accordingly, if you don't want to pay both income tax and tariffs, this might be a fantastic time to learn the truth, and if you're so inclined, walk away from the income tax, which never applied to you in the first place. I'm going to suggest you purchase the 4-pack, which contains Income Tax Shattering the Myths, The Business Guide to Payroll Withholding, The Business Handbook for Form W-9, 1099, and U.S. Person, and Body Science. The first reason to get the 4-pack is the price is already deeply discounted from purchasing the 4 items individually. The second reason is that in addition to it being deeply discounted, you get free shipping with the code TARIFFS. So go to drreality.news, drreality.news, and get free shipping on any order containing income tax shattering the myths by using the code TARIFFS at checkout. Also, purchasing my writings helps me to continue to be here for you with these revealing and thought-provoking presentations. Thank you for spending your time with me. I hope you found it of value.